The Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefery.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefery's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefery.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 67. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring you experts in the field to talk shop each week. If you've not already done so, please subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube, or check the website at ronmckeefery.com to stay up to date with the latest things we got going on. This week, extremely excited to have Brett Bartholomew. Brett is a performance specialist at Exos. He's the director of their NFL offseason program, and we have a shared passion for the motivation of the athlete. I mean, you've heard me say it on the show several times that if you cannot get them to buy into what you're doing, then you absolutely have no program. And so we have a shared passion for that. He talks a little bit about four drives of motivation that he's studied and utilizes there at Exos, and it's just a fantastic conversation. And so I'm real excited for you guys to hear that. Before we get started, I want to make sure we recognize our sponsors, EliteForm.com and Ignition APG. Ignition is a sports performance company based in Cincinnati, Ohio, that I got a chance to really get to know while there with the Bengals, and Cliff Marshall and Ben Kramer and the rest of the gang. They do a fantastic job, but you know, they have several things. They obviously do training programs. They have some equipment. They have a speed certification, which I'd highly recommend you check out. But they also just came out. Their parent company is Prasco. Prasco is a pharmaceutical company, and they just came out with a protein that is informed choice and just a fantastic product, fantastic tasting product, which is, I'm a guy that typically does not like protein powders and whatnot. So I would definitely recommend you checking into them. Give them a call or go on their Facebook page and give it a shot and see what you think. But I know that they're constantly looking for ways to assist the strength and conditioning coaches around the country, and this is just another example of that. Also, if you enjoy Iron Game Chalk Talk, you would definitely enjoy strength-ondemand.com. Strength On Demand is a online archive of strength and conditioning clinic presentations that myself and Rob Taylor put online for everybody. We keep it very, very cheap. It's $97. There's over 50 presentations on there and growing. And just a great way to get a little continuing education on your time from some of the top strength coaches in the country. So I would definitely recommend you checking that out, strength-ondemand.com, and spend a little time seeing if it's something for you. But want to get to our episode. Know you're going to get a ton out of this. Sit back, take some notes, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, real excited to have a good buddy on the show today, Brett Bartholomew out of Exos. He's doing some phenomenal things, and we've connected for several years here, and I'm just excited to have you on the show, man.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Brett, kind of, you know, you've done it all, really. You've worked in special forces. You worked on the team side. You're in the performance side. You know, go into your journey and kind of how you landed in your role there at Exos.
Sure, absolutely. My journey started young. When I was 14, 15, picked up my first magazine on training and fitness and any of that, you know, whether it's books by Ian King, I think the Book of Muscle was the first one that I had picked up, or Boyd Epley's Complete Conditioning for Football. Just started reading because I've always really liked the idea of self-improvement and how I can maximize my potential and others as well. You know, that led into me going to Kansas State University for my undergrad in kinesiology. During that time, I competed as a U.S. Olympic amateur boxer, and that became my real, other than personal training when I was a teenager, my real first experience at training other athletes. In exchange for my training, I would train other up-and-coming fighters to get ready for their fights, which really started to hit something in my head that, man, I'd really like to do this the rest of my life, just through connecting and getting people to forge towards a common goal. So once I was done there, applied for an internship at AP. Initially didn't get it because I wasn't a student anymore. I didn't find out about, I didn't have any mentors or friends that were in strength and conditioning. So I didn't know about any of this stuff until after my undergraduate career.
Right.
And you had to be a student. Ended up going down to Arizona to try to talk to them firsthand, to try to talk them into letting me get one. And they had said, well, you know, we've had people call and send resumes. I don't think we've ever had anybody show up on our doorstep. So
awesome.
If you want a spot and you can get there in a week, there's one in Florida. So went down there in 2010, did an internship there. And that led back to the collegiate setting for a while. I went to the University of Nebraska as a volunteer during the 09 offseason. I really wanted that team experience. Also grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. So when you grow up in that state,
you got to be ready.
Right, yeah, strength and conditioning and football are the main things there. So learned from James Dobson, tremendous guy, very knowledgeable. He hooked me up with a graduate assistant opportunity at Southern Illinois University under Jared Nesland at the time. Completed that and then went back to Exos. Started, as you alluded to, in the company, training special forces, military, youth, even just average Joes and Janes. And then since that's connected to the Andrews Institute, we worked a lot with sports rehab as well, guys trying to return to play. So that was invaluable in what then my young coaching career of being able to work with injured athletes, military athletes, average folks, and then kids where so much learning goes on. You really get a chance to find your coaching style dealing with such a wide breadth.
No doubt.
And then an opportunity came to run the NFL program out here in Exos, Arizona. So I followed out. In Luke Richardson's footsteps, he used to run the program here and is now with the Broncos. And I've been fortunate enough to have some success at hopefully making some strength coaches' lives easier on the team side by sending their guys to them back in shape. So that's what I do now, aside from other education responsibilities, as just on the floor grinding like hopefully a lot of these listeners and trying to help people.
Absolutely, man. Well, there's some great points in there. You know, and what I love to touch on always is, you know, obviously in undergrad, you know, so many of these undergrad graduates now and coaches coming out, they don't realize how much further ahead they are than people that are as successful as yourself at top programs or top companies. And, you know, you didn't even know about, you know, that internship. I didn't even know about the NSCA when I graduated, you know, undergrad.
Yeah.
And so you're so far, they're so far ahead, but what separates a lot of those coaches is that passion and that drive to go out, seek out an opportunity, the one that you want, you know, handle rejection and then turn around and go and make something happen despite that rejection. And that's exactly what you did. You got in a car, you drove down there and said, hey, I'm here to work. So put me to work or I'm going to keep showing up, you know, and that's awesome, man. That's what it takes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that's something that resonates with people that are in those undergraduate situations right now is, you know, every time I asked my advisor, and I asked him when I was a freshman, you know, I'd like to work with athletes. I enjoy the process of enhancing performance. What could I do? And he simply told me at the time, you know, open your own gym. And God bless him. You know, he didn't know. He probably didn't know either. Or he would have directed me. But there's so many people that think, oh, I got a late start or I'm not at a great school and I don't have this. You know, really, it's self-driven.
No.
And, you know, I had just as many, unfortunately, poor mentors that wanted to hold me back because, you know, I wasn't the shaved head, powerlifting, sit there with your arms crossed, intimidator type. Then I did people that believed in me. And so you just got to keep rolling. You know, you got to find your passion and hope that you're on this planet for a purpose and not let any of that stop because it's out there for you.
Oh, wow, man. Well, the other thing I thought you touched on that was really good too is being multidisciplined and having, you know, finding your true type of coach motivation or the type of coach that you are by interacting with a bunch of different types of people. So many times you come out and you're like, I want to train football and football only, and that's the direction I'm going to go. But all of a sudden you get thrown in different environments and you really just learn who you are and what your makeup is. And I think that having that wide range of experience, you would agree, has made you a better strength coach in the long run.
Oh, absolutely. Being able to connect with the kid from rural Iowa or East St. Louis is huge. And boxing was a real quick initiation into that because in that situation, I'm the minority. You know, a lot of these guys, I was in college doing this on the side. You know, I worked two jobs in college, but some of these kids I'd fight against have been fighting since they were 8 years old and come from all different kinds of backgrounds. And some of them have some really hard lives, and a lot of these guys were on my team. And so you got to sit there and, you know, martial arts and fighting teach you a lot about mm-hmm. how to really connect, because there's a shared respect when you're both vulnerable after you've gotten in the ring together. And you really just being able to connect with guys from different backgrounds is a really good initiation into my coaching career of having to do the same thing across sport realms, no matter what their background or you know, disposition is.
No, I agree 100% with that. You know, the thing that you alluded to early on, and this is where, you know, we both share the same passion is, you know, the X's and O's of strength and conditioning. That's, I mean, that, you know, even though it's, we've made huge strides, we really haven't made that big of strides in the last 50 years or so. But where things are changing is in the sports psychology and understanding the athlete and understanding their motivation. And I know that's an area of emphasis for you. You talk a little bit about drives. You know, what's the science behind drives, and what really, you know, how do you really motivate those athletes when you're dealing with, you know, that wide range of population?
Sure, yeah. So one of the main topics, as you alluded to, is just kind of the human nature and psychology side of things. And definitely important to know the science of what we do. But you also have to focus that lens on human nature as well, because we've all seen perfect programs done poorly.
No doubt. Right?
And it's your connection with somebody that's going to make those things jump off the page and really make them. You know, coaching, in my mind, is uniting people, purpose, and process. Right? If you can unite people, you have a common end goal, and they know the plan that's outlined, it's powerful. And so, you know, those words like motivation and inspiration are commonly thrown around. And, you know, the problem is those things by themselves are fairly short-lived. They're not really indelible. Somebody can be motivated in the short term, you know, or somebody can be inspired by a movie they watch. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about a drive, that's something we all have right here. Drives, in some of the research, are described as being a part of the limbic system of our brain. And people used to think that that was kind of a dormant, primitive system, but now more and more they find that that's really closely connected with the prefrontal cortex, which is kind of described as our seat of consciousness, so to speak. So when you look at, you know, people's actions, actions are always stimulated by beliefs, beliefs stimulated by desires, and desires by drives. And there's a really good book called Driven by Nathan Noria and Paul Lawrence that talk about what they believe are four main drives for any of us as people. And of course, nobody's just one of these. We could be a multitude of them.
Sure.
But really interesting, the drive to learn, the drive to acquire, the drive to bond, and the drive to defend. And when you look at those things, the drive to acquire, you know, they can mean a multitude of things. You know, just acquire a different status, acquire money, goods, acquire a record on a record board, anything simple, you know. And they even go back into tribal history where we just wanted to acquire food, you know,
right,
to survive. To learn, self-explanatory. People like improving their knowledge base, right? It empowers them, and they like to know the why of what they're doing. Bond, we all like to be around like-minded individuals. That's why there's podcast listeners that have followed your show for so long. They understand that this is a valuable resource to improve, and I can connect with somebody, you know, Coach McKeefrey, who's like-minded, and when we can do that. Or in the weight room, you know, some guys like to be around other guys that like to get after it and talk a little trash, and other people just like to forge ahead and do their work.
Sure.
And then finally, to defend. And that's a big one, because that's the competitive aspect. And that can go really into psychosocial, like looking at one's ego, wanting to protect, you know, their status as the big dog on the team, or just even wanting to win a competition that you organize. So I think when you look at individuals through saying, man, like, what really drives them? If you look at your Excel sheet, you got his vertical jump number, you got his clean, you got all this, but do you have his drive type personality? Do you know three things, you know, about him via like a strength finders?
Right.
You know, because that stuff influences the way that you coach.
That's a great book too, if you haven't read that.
Yeah.
The you know, I've always been, you know, motivated by this, you know, and with our athletes, we sit down with them before each and every training phase, and because, you know, even from semester to semester, you know, their life changes, you know, especially at this age group, you know. At Exos, when we work with the NFL prospects, you got them for a short amount of time, you know, What are some of the strategies that you've used to best find, you know, which one of those four drives or combination of those four drives really motivates them? Obviously, one of them being that they want to go on in the NFL, but you and I both know that even high-level athletes, sometimes they just do it because they're good at it, not necessarily because they love it, you know?
Yeah.
And so sometimes you really got to find that button and be able to tweak it. So what are some of the strategies that you've used?
Yeah, so one of the things I've toyed with lately is just going onto Google Drive and creating a form that features five questions. And the questions, when you look at some of them, you know, don't really give away what I'm trying to look at. They just ask the athlete, hey, what point resonated with you today? Right. What best describes yourself? Learn, acquire, bond, defend. You know, I ask them questions about what they took away from the session or what they want to get out of the session. And those kind of, all those questions add up to some kind of drive or personality type where I can then categorize that individual. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, Don Terry Poe was out here this offseason. He's a tremendous guy. And asking him some of these questions, I learned real quickly, Poe's a guy that really likes to defend and bond. But he also likes to learn. So he was an example where we had three of those squares. Now,
right.
You know, we can say which one is he the majority of, but it helped me understand that Poe really trust is monumental to him. He's not a guy where it's just turn up the music and get after it. Mm-hmm. He wants to know that you can connect with him. He's a family-oriented guy. He still works a lot with his strength coach. I train him usually pre-OTAs, and then a strength coach that he's worked with for a long time in Memphis gets him ready for training camp. And he's got that routine, and he connects with us differently. So, right. You know, when I can talk to Poe, you know, about family or, you know, get him around other people that are like him, and he can bond with those people that are real tight-knit kind of guys, sure. It makes his experience better. So I'll do things like a five-question questionnaire that they can do from their phone, real easy. You know, that it's they're not long questions. I'll try to organize them differently based on what we're doing that day in partner work or on the racks. And I'll toy with that in a lot of different ways, you know. And like you said, they're not all motivated by the same thing. So when I create the off-season, which is typically three phases, right, there's phase one, which is just pure off-season, getting their body back into restorative kind of working order. Phase two, which is OTA prep, that starts to ramp up. They take a little break out, obviously, when they're in OTAs or working with their coaches. And then phase three, camp prep. So how I scale the program is based on who I have and what that end goal is will change on those things as well.
Right.
You know, right now I can't, you know, we always get a smaller number of guys pre-camp just because they're trying to maximize their vacation time or what have you.
Sure.
So I'm limited in competitions, which I can do pre-OTAs. Mm-hmm. So that drive to, like, bond or defend, I got to find other individual competitions or ways we can cultivate that within the workout. We'll use the Kaiser racks for that, the power output. We'll find creative ways to not only teach them, but, again, try to breed some healthy competition where it's safe, of course, right. But still getting after it. And some guys just like you to talk to them, Ron, like you know that, and being able to sit down and say, hey, man, how's your day going, you know, in between, you know, or during warm-ups or in between sets, and asking them what brought them out here in the first place or what got them involved in this, you know, more so than just kind of surface-level questions. It's that iceberg technique. You've got to get beneath that.
Sure. Well, I know, you know, with working in a team setting, back when you were working in a team setting and then obviously with even Special Forces, because you and I both have done that, you know, them. Sometimes they just have to show up because they have to show up, you know?
Yeah.
And so how do you, you know, when you're doing it with 100 guys or you're doing it with a group of really technical guys that maybe aren't necessarily bought in yet, how do you, you know, what are some of the things that you do to basically touch each guy individually when you're limited to a staff?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially out here because it's basically me and an intern. And so that gets challenging. Let me touch on your first question when you're saying, guys that just show up that don't really, it's a little harder to pinpoint that drive. I put them in a position to fail. Mm-hmm. I put them in a position to fail, such as, you know, having them do a drill or exercise and not really giving them a whole lot of feedback, but letting them feel it for themselves.
Right.
Or, you know, I'll put them in a position where they can just kind of be humbled by somebody that knows the drill a little bit, and I'll purposely withhold a little information. Again, nothing dangerous, whether it's like a VersaClimber thing or what have you. I just won't let them know a little strategy.
Right.
Come over the edge. And then once they've been humbled a little bit, it's amazing how people open up.
Yeah.
Once they realize that getting on, for example, we did it the other day, the VersaClimber, and I, you know, the guys that know what to do get long, powerful strides and get through those feet. We had a guy that is the kind of person that you're mentioning. He just gets on there and starts churning. He's just got an engine, chip on the shoulder, me against the world. Thanks, coach, but I don't need you. I got this.
That's right.
Well, as he's laying on the floor exasperated, all of a sudden he's really open to information.
Yep.
And there's a great article that touches on that for anybody that likes to read on this stuff, and it's called The Rocky Road to the Top, Why Talent Needs Trauma. And it talks about this skewed talent development model that we've all been kind of taught to have, where athletes almost need to be given every resource and catered to, and we got to make the process so smooth for them. And it talks about, no, great learners and great performers can always look back at some kind of traumatic, and again, there's loose usage of that term,
sure,
experience that humbled them and made them hungry. Lance Armstrong had no idea how to swim. When he jumped in the pool the first time, it was like, oh my goodness, like I couldn't be worse at this. And he understood right then, like, I need to grow from this and learn how I can be open-minded to any kind of performance. You know, like I said, purpose is a performance enhancer. And so when somebody's laying there and they realize they've just been humbled, it's amazing how those guys are like, no, coach, I don't need you. All of a sudden start to say, all right, what's the trick here? What do I do?
No doubt. Well, I mean, you touched on two things that I try to bring forward in our program all the time. And you know, the one unifying characteristic of most of the athletes that we deal with is obviously the love for competition. You know, I mean, they're competitive by nature or they wouldn't be doing what they're doing. And especially when you challenge what they're good at.
Yeah.
And so by doing that, you know, it makes an atmosphere and typically in which they thrive or they like to be a part of. And you can really draw out a lot of good things, a lot of positive qualities. The other thing is, you know, we try to, you know, one of the things we talk about here, especially at Eastern, is making this one of the most positive experiences of their life. You know, not the most, you know, positive, but one of the most positives. And I know by being an athlete, having been, you know, in a single parent home and all those types of things is, you know, most of the characteristics that I developed about myself as a man, I learned by playing football, you know, and on the football field, I learned some of those skills on the field. I learned some of them in the weight room, but I learned a lot of them off the weight room. And so we talk a lot about being a part of the other 22 hours, not just the 2 hours we got them, but of being a part of the other 22 hours so that we're not fighting a losing battle when they walk into the gym, you know.
Yeah.
And when you're talking with difficult athletes, that's, you know, a lot of times that's the case is finding that button. And, you know, you mentioned defend as being a drive. You know, these guys hopefully aren't, you know, they're fearful for their life or anything. But when you talk defending as a motivational drive, what do you mean with your team? Is it basically I'm trying to defend our, you know, our undefeated season? Am I defending, you know, my brotherhood with my guys? What are we talking about here?
Sure, it's definitely going to be individual to that athlete. And that's, again, right, where it's funny. People will spend all kinds of money trying to learn minutia about one screen, right, or one tool or one thing, when in reality, every interaction we have, every drill we do, every movement is a screen. And so when you get an athlete, let's say, is labeled an athlete that you can tell he's really driven to defend and compete, you gotta try to probe around and see, like, okay, what's my, if you're talking about a team, I want to try to answer one question at a time so I can be concise.
Yeah.
What's your team's identity? You know, how did they do last year? Did they win a title in their conference? Great. Well, then, you know, their drive to defend is obvious. They want to keep that status. They want to keep it going because we're all tied to a legacy. It's not any of us what we do. It's not just about wanting to master and like achieve mastery. It's about leaving a legacy. You know, they want to be the best team that came through that university.
Sure.
If it's an individual, you know, we got a guy in right now that's one of the most fit guys. I mean, I'll throw the gauntlet at him and he gets it. So when a new guy comes in and thinks, all right, I got this. Like what? I've had, you know, 6 strength coaches. What's Exos going to do? You know, and it's not that we do anything different. We just, you know, it's a different environment for him. So he comes in and he always wants a challenge against that alpha dog. So some guys, it's that alpha mentality. Some, it's wanting to keep that reputation. You know, for me, it's not wanting, I've been identifying myself. For me, it's, you know, defending against mediocrity. I almost lost my life once when I was young, and that woke me up real quick to not want to be put in the dirt without feeling like I did the best I could on this earth. And so I look at me first before I look at other athletes, and you'll start to see that some of these guys fit cleanly, just like you wouldn't use one corrective for the active straight leg raise, right? You're going to try a variety and an arsenal of them. So defending the title, defending a status. Again, if you read the book, it talks about defending tribal behavior for your life. For military and special forces operators, that's what they believe it, defending the person next to them.
Right.
Fighting for their brother. and fighting for their country. And so you just got to find a way to unify those themes. You know, it's interesting. Like, when you look at the language, everything we do, as you said, just even outside of the weight room or inside, shapes our behavior. And I wrote some of this down. So sorry, I'm going to look away
notes.
But it's funny. There's a favorite quote of mine by Sun Tzu that says, "All men can see these tactics by which I conquer, but what none can see is the strategy of which victory is evolved." And that's what scares me right now. We have a lot of coaches that want to, you know, just get more and more tactics, and that's great to a degree. But what's the bigger strategy? Because the word and language that you use are like your sets and reps. Competitions and obstacles are your tools, like dumbbells and barbells. The environment that you create reinforces the work that they do. It sets the tone. And then most importantly, as a coach, your presence and the way that you coach and the purpose that you try to convey to them is like recovery to them. Even when they're beat down, it brings them back the next day, reinvigorated and ready to compete. And so it's getting people to see that bigger strategy in which victory is evolved, like Sun Tzu alludes to. And then that allows you to really pinpoint, where's my coaching development? Where should that be aimed at?
No doubt. No doubt. You know, we spend a lot of time, you know, when we bring our staff in, our intern staff in, we bring them in for a week called University McKeefer, where we're teaching them basically the lifts. Okay. So this is when I beat them up. I crush them, teach them manual resistance, teach them, you know, our bench squat clean, whatever. But beyond that, that's about the extent of the X's and O's of the programming and the strength part. Every day we meet before and after every training session, talking purely about mostly the environment. You know, what are we going to do today to change things? And, you know, and so we talk first with our staff. It permeates through us. Then we bring our athletes in and we put them on the whiteboard, and it's usually some sort of quote. And here's the agenda for the day. And this is the tone, and this is what we're trying to accomplish, and making sure that we're trying to, and without having known these four drives specifically, really try to bring those up. And so I like the four drives. Probably going to start to focus a little bit more about and making sure that I'm including something in there for each one. But I think that's important, as I think, you know, even somewhat naturally, a lot of strength coaches, they try to touch on these things independently without kind of having a strategy for the entire session. And so I think you got a great point there with strength coaches, is not just periodizing your program, but periodizing your motivational message or the focus of your team and their motivation through each and every training session.
Yeah, you're spot on. It's programming for people, not just performance, because if you do the former, the latter can take care of itself. And again, I always got to be careful with the message. Some people think, oh, what, you're individualizing it? You're letting people run your program? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying get to know what your team needs on more than just a physical kind of scale, and program for psychologically as well. You know, get to understand their identity. Because listen, if you don't have buy-in, you know, we're trying to, I think I heard, maybe it was Alan Cosgrove, I think he said, we try to sell people on a future result they can't see.
Right.
Man, like, that is powerful. Yeah. Everybody in my family, I'm a black sheep, everybody in my family is a stockbroker. And when I was younger, I saw no parallels between what we do.
Right.
But in reality, there's a lot of them. My father has to look at trends and, you know, worldwide trends to predict performance in the market. And we have to look at trends in behavior, attitudes, you know, performance, and all to get an idea of where we want to go next with our program. You know, so from looking at the parallels of something like a stockbroker to what we do, and what we're starting to do with sports science now, a lot of it is predictive behavior. And as Boyd Epley says, the great ones adjust. And if you're not planning, I think that's a great idea what you said, to be able to say, hey, how can I incorporate these four drives, whether it's daily or weekly? I mean, think of what people could do with their drills. You know, if you have a drill where, like, they got to work as a team, that's the drive to bond.
Right.
You know, if it's one-on-one, that's the drive to acquire or defend.
Right.
You know, or if it's just simple skill acquisition and we're learning, that's the drive to learn. You're going to see people flourish in different environments. So why not think of everything you do along those lines as well, too?
Absolutely.
It's not the vision that we see. It's only the one that they connect with that is powerful.
No doubt. Well, something, you know, that, you know, that's obviously maybe an extreme is all these mental toughness drills that you see kind of going around the country. And I think that that's one of those terms that it's so undefined and so misinterpreted sometimes because, I mean, I think of, like, Steve Jobs, you know. That guy's mentally tough, man. You know, he's mentally tough. Barack Obama, mentally tough. What, you know, George Bush, mentally tough guys, you know, or they wouldn't do what they do, you know. So you don't have to sit there and beat them down to do that. What's your definition of mental toughness and kind of, you know, where are we missing the boat maybe a little bit?
Yeah, I think we just might be missing the boat on word choice. You know, it's almost like motivation, inspiration, and mental toughness. You know, it's not, we're going the right direction. We're all searching for the same thing. And how do we build more resilient athletes? And I think Angela Duckworth calls it grit. You know, so it seems almost like kind of the world of training, right, where we have so much information now, but we also, that can confuse people, and we also have access to bad information. You're looking at grit and mental toughness and motivation and inspiration. For me, it's just coming down to drives. Again, that's why I like that term. It's saying, what are we driven to do? Because if you're driven by something, you'll deal with whatever the consequences of wanting to get there are. And that's mental toughness, right?
Absolutely.
And so when people think that they're just going to, you know, do some ridiculous kind of, you know, just put somebody in a position that isn't really safe or ethical to try to build mental toughness, you're not doing that unless that touches on that individual's drive. If they don't care, they don't adapt.
Right.
And just like you can have 75%, 85% on your card for your periodization scheme. If that athlete has no concept of load and what that is, you're not getting that adaptation because it's not a true 85%.
Right.
So I think for me, it's identifying, okay, what are the words that are out there and what do they really come down to? It comes down to drives, because we know if somebody cares, that action is going to follow. It's just giving breath to the right ember, you know,
Absolutely.
To create that flame.
Absolutely. Well, man, this has been awesome. I know it's a Saturday and I want to get you out of your office, but the, you know, we always end these shows with some resources. You already gave us your quote. I don't know if you have another one, but, you know, maybe a quote that you live by or that's plastered up in the weight room somewhere.
I think one thing that always comes back to me, whether I, you know, mess something up in my own life or I try to give advice to anybody else, is, you know, when your values are clear to you, making decisions becomes easier.
Right.
And that's by Roy Disney. And that one I just always come back to whenever I'm trying to make a tough decision. It's like, what do I value here personally and professionally? And where do I want to go with that? And then it always sets me on the right path. Sometimes I don't like that path, right? but you got to do it. So I'd say that's one quote. And here's another one. I'm sorry, I know you didn't ask for two.
No,
but
absolutely.
When you do the common things in life in an uncommon way, you command the attention of the world. And I'm not saying go out there and be different just for the sake of being different, but don't fit a mold. Don't think that there's only one way to be a strength coach or one way to be anything that you are. Understand what makes you unique as a person. And man, like, radiate that, because people will respond and connect with that. Just be authentic. Do you. And again, I think that just comes from past experiences of some folks trying to, you know, I'm an energetic guy, I'm passionate about this, and some didn't want that. But at the end of the day, that's how I coach, and that's how I'm going to coach, because
right.
Guys will appreciate realness. So,
no doubt. And how you find that, my opinion, and I think you would agree, is you're constantly researching. You're constantly challenging your status quo and
yeah.
learning from things outside of the norm. And then all of a sudden, you start to become an individual because – You are challenging and presenting information, maybe even sometimes the same information in a different way, and
yeah.
I think that's a great quote. What about, you gave us about 10,000 books, but I know you got more. Give us a book, an app, and a website recommendation.
Sure, the book I'd recommend that everybody reads, no matter where you're at in your career, is Mastery by Robert Greene.
Yeah.
Robert Greene is an author I stumbled on when I was fairly young, and man, you wouldn't think that has much to do with strength and conditioning, but it's human nature and understanding how occurrences, both past, present, and future, influence us. And you got to read it the right way. If you read his stuff, especially like the 48 Laws of Power, it can
right.
come across as self-serving.
Right.
But he tells you in that book that's not the point. I'm just trying to tell you what is and what has been, and so you can recognize those things. But Mastery is something that anybody dedicated to their craft, and I think everybody listening to this podcast is, and I am, and I know you are as well. Man, it's a powerful, it just touches on everything, how to sharpen your saw, but also how to communicate and promote the right message through the image that you represent daily.
Mastery and Power, both, you know, they give you so many great little nuggets that you can use in those whiteboard type of, those motivational moments, you know, before, after, during a lift, that there's so many stories that you can
yeah.
pull out just from that are some of the things that we're talking about. So that's a great one.
Yeah.
What about app, right? Yeah, app or website?
Sure. App, I'll give you one for personal, professional, and financial. For personal, I really like Sunrise. It's a calendar app that you can put on your Android or iPhone, and it takes everything from your Exchange account on Outlook, your Google Mail, what have you, and just formats it in a really unique way and combines that with other events of your choosing that you can really get a good bird's eye view and syncs it across the board. And it's tough because I know everybody that's been on this show prior to me has given some great ones, so I'm trying to be outside the box a little.
Oh, that's good.
Professional, I like Pulse. Pulse is a LinkedIn news site that you can choose all kinds of variety, whether it's leadership, psychology, and it just being able to take those seemingly unconnected ideas and forge them, make you more powerful as a person, as a coach.
Absolutely. I think.
And then Mint for financial, for especially us as strength coaches, we got to take care of our financial health. And I know you're big on that, which is awesome. And, you know, Mint just, you know, if you own a home, it'll pull in the details about your home mortgage, all your bank accounts, credit cards. It'll allow you to set goals and things on spending and budgets. And I just think that's something with the volatility of our career, you gotta stay on. So invest in yourself and always know where you're at financially.
No, I agree 100% with that. And I use Mint. And what's nice about it is it integrates pretty seamlessly. You can connect all your accounts and, you know, it pretty much puts your spending where it should go, and you can see a clear picture. It's just like what we tell our athletes. We tell them to set clear goals and expectations, and that's a fantastic one. And Pulse I have as well. Sunrise, I got to check out, man. I haven't checked that one out yet.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's great. Well, what about, lastly, a website then, you know?
Yeah, man, website, this is a tough one, you know. One of the websites I try to visit daily is Strategy Plus Business. Strategy Plus Business is a site that, again, just like the name insinuates, talks about, you know, just how to be more strategic and how you develop yourself, others, and create a really powerful environment. Looking at, you know, things like game theory and how, if we want an outcome, what are different ways we can shape it? Mm-hmm. And people got to get beyond looking at if an article says something about the workplace or office environment. It's all relative.
No doubt.
So Strategy Plus Business is a really good one to get some unconventional ideas or maybe some ideas that in other realms and then apply it in your school or your setting.
Absolutely. Well, man, I truly appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate the work you guys, you and your Nick and the rest of the gang out at Exos are doing. I mean, one of the things that I respect the most about Exos is that it's not just a company that's motivated by dollars. They're going out, they're doing research, they're constantly challenging the status quo, and they're doing it on a global scale. And, you know, so what you guys are doing out there is phenomenal. I know you guys have some, you know, some courses now online, you got some education platforms online. Talk a little bit about that and we'll get you out of here, man.
Yeah, no problem. So we're trying to take our mentorship platform and really just put it out there, just like you do with Strength on Demand and all the other resources, so people, no matter what situation they're in, they can access that. So we're also bringing other people in, whether it's Dan Baker or Franz Bosch, to try to give courses that we can put out there for folks. So just anything we can do to help support the community, that's one of Mark's biggest purposes, and a part of our mission statement is just to try to all work together and try to make this easier for each other as we go ahead, because there's enough confusion and variables in performance as it is. It doesn't need ego. So we just want to help put information out. And, yeah, go to teamexos.com/education, and you guys can lock that in. You can also reach me on social media, and I'm happy to share any of these links to you. I'm on Twitter at coach_Brett, B-R-E-T-T-B. And you can find me on Facebook. And also, if there's anybody in Arizona around – I believe it's the third week in October, sometime between the 18th and the 21st. I'll be speaking at the Arizona State Clinic for NSCA on a variety of these subjects as well. And I'm really anxious to learn from anybody that's out there, and I hope I'm able to contribute as well, because, you know, especially you, Coach McKeefrey, try to pay homage to those that came before us. So just trying to follow in your guys' footsteps and do right by the industry.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out RonMcKeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @RMcKeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @Ron.McKeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.